This is WHCC in Holland. Time now for Talk of the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. And our Talk of the Town number is 395-1450. Our guest this morning, well, Sarah Leland is with us in the studio. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Duke. Great to be back.
And we have a gentleman with us who's going to let Sarah introduce.
Well, his name is Jim Root, and his father's name was Kenneth Root. And Jim is becoming famous right now because his father was an engineer based in England and also northern
Africa.
And he has just finished doing a book that contains the letters his father wrote during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an amazing history. So, Jim, tell us why you got into doing this book and what's important about it.
Okay, well, first of all, good morning to you, Duke, as well. And Sarah, thank you for having me on the program. It's a very important book to me and our family because it really documents our father's time in England. He was stationed at Hardwick Air Force Base, part of the 93rd Bombardment Group, a group of B-24 bombers, very important part of the war. But my father passed away at an early age, although he survived the war. I was the youngest of six children, and so I never really got to speak to him or talk to him much about his time in the war, and heard a lot of the stories from our mother. So this is a way for me to really document a lot of the family history and specifically that early years of my dad in the war.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about what he did, and maybe we should start out with the fact that we discovered that he and Duke both were at Barksdale Air Force Field.
Right, exactly.
amazing, huh?
Small world. My dad was, when he entered the service in the Army, he did some training at Chanute Field in Illinois, but then was transferred to help form the initial B-24 bomber group. The 93rd Bombardment Group was part of the 2nd Air Division, and they were stationed and formed out of Barksdale Airfield in Shreveport, Louisiana. My mom grew up in a small town just south of there, and that's actually where they met. So it was really the formation of the first B-24 unit that was preparing to go over to Europe to enter the war.
That's a nice way of put running bombing.
Exactly.
Barksdale Field was known as the Country Club of the South.
Really? Why was that?
It was a very nice field and had very good buildings for the officers and that sort of thing. The officers had nice stucco homes, and it was very nice for them.
And it still is today. It's part of the 8th Air Force as the B-52s fly out of Berkshire, mm-hmm. all over the world in support of the efforts today.
So your dad's job was...
He started out with one of the four squadrons of the 93rd. He was responsible for the engineering and the grounds crews that maintained the aircraft. Ultimately, throughout the war, he was promoted to take over responsibility for all four bomb groups. All four squadrons of the bomb group. There were basically 15 B-24 bombers per group. So ultimately, he had responsibility for over 60 aircraft. He had almost 300 men that worked in the maintenance area. And he was responsible to make sure he kept them flying. And in his letters,
yes.
in the book, and some of his interviews, he always talked about keeping them flying. So that was his goal. And he always referred to the B-24 planes as his babies. So a lot of passion, a lot of personal responsibility as well for keeping them going for the pilots.
As the engineering officer, he didn't necessarily have to fly in them.
Correct. He did not. Obviously, he went over and when they left Manchester, England, or Manchester, New Hampshire for England. He was in the lead plane with the group. They did, at the end of the war, they did what they called trolley runs, where they would, after the war was ended, the B-24 pilots would take the ground crews to see the devastation and see what the work was, but very few flying opportunities for him, other than the travels to North Africa and around.
Mm. What did they go to North Africa for?
Well, the bomb group actually became nicknamed Ted's Traveling Circus because they, although they were stationed in England, they actually went to the Middle East and North Africa three different times to support very high-level missions with other bomb groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually went to North Africa twice, to the Middle East, as I said, another area. But they became known as the group that kind of traveled around and always got relied on to help support different missions, not just their specific individual missions.
So one of those missions was the famous oil field raid.
Correct. August 1st, 1943 was a famous raid to knock out the German oil supply and fuel supply in Ploiești, Romania. There were actually five bomb groups put together, some B-17s, but also the B-24s, 176 bombers in total went in. It was considered a great success as it knocked out 60% of the oil supply for the Germans. However, of the 176 planes that went over, only 90 returned, so had heavy losses.
Yeah.
But it was considered one of the major turning points of the war.
Mm-hmm. Now, you didn't even know your dad existed at that time.
Not really. You know, obviously growing up on the farm, we worked together on the farm and so on, but being so young, at 11 years old, I didn't know to really ask him any of these questions.
Carter, you're the youngest in the family,
I'm the youngest of six, that's correct.
Uh-huh.
So a hello to any of my family members listening right now out around the countryside.
And, you know, in your family, which started with the marriage of your mom and dad, that was also a very fast, you know, they married right before he left, right?
That is correct. They met on
World War II classic.
Exactly. They met on April 20th, 1942, and were married on May 16th, right before the unit shipped out to Fort Myers, Florida, for 3 months of training in the summertime before they were then went over to England. So very short courtship. You'll see in some of the letters in the book, you know, his love for my mom and each other, and it's really quite a love story in a lot of ways. The book is his original handwritten letters, and you know, I'm convinced that just reading through his letters, that he probably wouldn't have survived the war without his dreams and hopes,
right,
and continued love for her and each other.
Yeah, it's quite obvious from his letters that he had a great love for her and she for him, and she was kind of ill during that time, wasn't she?
Well, there's several references to that. I think you know, she had a few kind of minor health issues, I guess, of what I can tell. I can't really tell. She never really talked about it to me either. She passed away in 2008, but a few things it looked like.
There's pictures of her as a bride and her later on.
He talked about her going to Barksdale for medical attention.
There are a couple. You're right. There are a couple letters about that. I think I think there was some cases of maybe some diabetes detected early on and some things like that. But a lot of reference always to wanting to have a large family. You know, that was part of the dream. And what I talked about is the dreaming to have a farm after the war, raise a big family. He always referred to the boys as Yanks and the girls as rebels. So you'll see a lot of references to, you know, our six Yanks and our six rebels. Won't we have fun on the farm? And my dad grew up in Cooperstown, New York, so he's from the north.
Uh-huh.
My mom from Louisiana, from the south. So I think as they, you know, that was kind of their way to nickname Yanks and rebels of the children that they're expecting to have. So
it was amazing, though, that their marriage lasted the way it did, because so often a marriage where they only went together for a very short time didn't last.
Right. And you know, growing up with what I remember, of course, my dad, I share a lot of stories about my dad growing up in there and what I remember, but, you know, always very respectful, always, you know, just the loving, constant care for the family. It was very evident from some of my memories.
What amazes me is how she kept all the letters.
Oh, I know it. Well, we've had these for 70 years, and we've been saved in boxes and bags around the house, et cetera, and we'd read through them, and I thought, boy, that'd be a great, great story to put together in a book. So it documents the history for future generations of the Root family, of course, as well as others. But
and you
have
a national group that gathers the veterans and the families of veterans.
We do. The 93rd Bombardment Group Association is still very active, one of the few bomb group associations that continues. A lot of them suspend their work after all the veterans have gone on, but we have a very active second and third generation group, and we have an annual reunion every year. Very
and
positive.
And you had one in October?
We just had one in Hartford, Connecticut, actually home of Pratt & Whitney, which were the engines that were put on the B-24, and we had 70 attendees. We had 10 original veterans still with us that were able to get to that reunion, and it's we want to preserve the legacy of the 93rd Bomb Group, and that's kind of our mission and goal. And we do archive a lot of records, memorabilia, photos, letters, etc. But
is that accessible somewhere online?
It is. We have a website, www.93bg, for 93rd Bomb Group.com. Okay. Great history, great, keeps up with our activities. We have a great organization there of people around the. Actually, we're affiliated still with a museum that we have at Hardwick in England, mm-hmm. at the air base, and it's a really good way for us to keep connected and really preserve the legacy of the 93rd. Is our mission and goal.
There are two connections to Holland. One of them, Juke knew about, which is that there's a B-24 bomber.
Yeah.
Here in Holland.
Right.
Talk about that a bit.
Well, it came in to visit. It's not mm-hmm. located here in Holland. But,
right.
There are actually two flying B-24s right now. One's through the Collins group out of Massachusetts. They were in here in town in 1996. There's some pictures of that in my book. They fly around the country. They have a large schedule. You know, they tour the countryside. Then there's also one of the Confederate Air Force out of Midland, Texas. And those are the two only flying B-24s at this point in time in the States. And there are a lot of B-24s stationed on exhibit at different museums around.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to ask our listeners to call in with questions.
Yes,
if they have
by all means, if you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 395-1450. I think we should mention that these are V-mails.
Correct.
And during World War II, they came up with the invention of V-mails, so you could write a letter, and it would go on microfilm and be transported to the state that way and regenerated here.
Because correct. They discovered that the weight of mail was becoming burdensome to carry back and
exactly.
forth?
Exactly.
Oh, yes.
Just the weight and the transportation. They said out of the 80 million pieces of mail per year, about 25 million approximately went on V-mail.
Mm-hmm.
And V-mail, you would write it out. You'd write the letter on the form. It would be exactly as you said, Juke. It could be microfished. It would be sent over to the states. I believe there were three processing centers throughout the states, one Chicago, one New York, and I think San Francisco. Then they'd be reprinted and then mailed to the home.
Right.
Hometown. So yes, that's actually what a lot of the letters in the book are, the actual V-mail format from that process. It's something they borrowed from the British, but again, a way to save the weight and save the transportation costs.
But again, it's amazing that your mother saved them
all. Oh, I know it. It is, and unfortunately, he refers to her letters a lot. And unfortunately, my mom always said that the letters she wrote over to him were ordered destroyed at the end of the war. All the mail was ordered destroyed.
Oh, really? So, I didn't know that.
So unless they're out there somewhere that I don't know about, and maybe in Europe
probably
floating
not.
Around, but I know it.
Maybe they were thinking about the weight of all those
could
letters
be.
Coming
exactly.
back, too.
But that was a long time to be apart.
Almost 3 years, 1,017 days. He left here on Labor Day of 1942 and came back on the Queen Mary. Arriving actually on her birthday, June 20th, 1945. So 1,017 days he was gone.
Mm. And your book is titled V-mail, :1,017 days.
Exactly.
Amazing.
And never spoke once in those 1,017 days.
Yeah, they didn't have cell phones in those days, so you could talk
that's
back,
right.
back to the state
right.
to your girlfriend.
Or Skype.
The amazing thing that I think of, because my father was in World War II.
Right.
As well, in the Navy, and all of his letters came back chopped to pieces because he didn't understand, I don't think, the code of what he could say and what he couldn't say. And so I'm sure he loved, you know, his exploration of the mm-hmm. islands, both first in Hawaii
uh-huh.
and then the Philippines. But he was censored
yep.
to the height.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
the,
your dad knew how to avoid that.
Well, the officers were the ones that were sent would be responsible to censor. So not only did he censor his own as an officer, he was a major as the ranking engineering officer, but he also had to censor and read people in his unit as well. But yes, very few letters. He knew what to write, what not to write. I think only one letter that I could find had any kind of cutouts or black marks where something was taken out. But most of the letters, he talks about his hopes and dreams going to the future. With a little bit of sprinkled of history of daily life and what it was like there for him on the base or in Africa. And you can see, very few of the letters were censored.
And the handwriting is really readable. Juke, you read them.
Yes. Yeah, well, I read some of them. I haven't read all of them yet.
No, yeah, 1,017.
Yeah. Well, it's his original handwriting, which you say is very good, and that was intentional. I thought that would be a great format for this book. You see, we could have retyped them, reprinted them formally, but I think it really adds to the...
You get a sense of the originality.
Exactly, and almost... Almost like
really
you're there. It's almost like you're still there, as my mom would have read them at that back 70 years ago.
For anybody who might be curious, I'm sure readers world locally could get these books. I'm not sure they have them right now yet, but they order all kinds of things for anybody who wants them. And they're also available on Amazon.com if you want to go national.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I do have an email set up as well that I could be contacted by if you're interested in a copy at vmail1017days@gmail.com.
That's easy. Would you repeat that?
Yes, it's vmail1017days, so it's V-M-A-I-L 1017-D-A-Y-S at gmail.com, and I'll get a copy out to you.
I'm interested in how you wound up in Holland.
Well, That's a good question.
From the farm.
West Olive, right. No, actually, my job brought here. I've been in manufacturing. I have an engineering degree and MBA degree. So I actually came to mid-state of Michigan early in my career, manufacturing, and then transferred out here to work at one of the local manufacturing companies in 1989. Mm-hmm. So we moved to the west side. Beautiful part of the state here in Michigan, obviously. So we love it out here, and I've been out here now 25 years. But my job brought me out here as far as being in the manufacturing world. Great, great manufacturing area. So,
but you not only are an engineer with the job, but you also have are part of the American Legion Band. Is that right? So what instrument do you play?
I am a tenor sax player. I've been playing my whole life. And, been a member of actually four bands in the area, the Scottville Clown Band up north by the Ludington area. We have a lot of fun. I've been with that band for 17 years. Also locally, the American Legion Band. Great organization. We were fortunate to be invited to the 70th anniversary of Pearl Harbor back in 2011. We had a great trip over there, a 10-day trip, and now we're making plans to go to Normandy in June of next year. We've been invited for the 70th anniversary of D-Day, so we'll be playing concerts in France, Belgium, and the Netherlands.
And aren't you going to England, actually?
Actually, I plan to extend my personal trip and go an extra 3 days and go to Hardwick Air Base, which is north of London by about an hour and a half, and actually go to the museum and go to the airfield there. A local
that
man...
That air base is still... working base.
It is a little bit. Basically, a man bought the bought the property and has restored some of it. The remnants of the runways are still there to a certain extent. There's actually one Quonset hut there that he has set up as a museum. They have quite an annual event to commemorate the 93rd Bomb Group that was there. So I'm looking forward to going over there in mid-June for my first trip, first time to see actually where my dad was and where he wrote a lot of these letters from, obviously. So.
Mm-hmm. From your dad's letters, I guess he was pretty well behaved in the service, because I don't hear anything about crap games or anything like that.
Not many. There's a few. He talks about some pinochle games and some card games and so on. And I think there's one letter where he talks about they used to ride their bicycles down about 5 or 6 miles to a local pub, and there's only one reference to a letter I could find where he says his bicycle had trouble getting home that night at midnight. So. But no, he never smoked, never drank. It was very clean.
I think we should mention the CD you have in there as well.
Yes, I have a DVD. There are two items on that disc that comes with the book. It is actually about a 10-second video clip of my dad in Northern Africa when they stayed there for the training. We happened to come across, in our reunion organization, we happened to come across a video clip on 8mm movies of him actually at the tent that he stayed in. They all stayed in tents on the desert. And actually just a short clip of him pushing, helping a guy on a motorcycle, one of his comrades there. But we just happened to find that video clip. It was amazing when we located it. Some other people were viewing it and thought it was somebody else, and my sister and I at the reunion saw that video clip and said, we're just yelling and screaming, "That's our dad, that's our dad." We couldn't ever imagine seeing a video clip of him. The second part of the DVD is an audio clip of him. He was part of a broadcast from the BBC in London on April 12th, 1943, to kick off the second war bond drive. And they collected eight soldiers from the from the England area that were originally from upstate New York, central New York, and the Syracuse radio station sponsored the second War Bond Drive kickoff, and it was broadcast over via shortwave, of course, and we're fortunate, after 30 years of searching, we're able to get the audio archive of that, so I've actually hear his voice as well from that time frame. So that's pretty exciting for us as a family to hear, get a little video clip as well as get an audio clip. So that's
exciting.
Included.
It actually brought tears to my eyes.
I've got to take time out here for some weather. Just a moment. We'll be right back with our guests here this morning. And for today, we can expect snow showers, steady to slowly falling temperatures. And tonight, snow showers with a low of 19. And tomorrow, snow showers possible with a high of 22. Right now we're looking at 25 degrees, and this weather is brought to you on WHTC by the Farmhouse Restaurant. Delicious, thin, and crispy cracker crust pizza. All right, we're talking about this book this morning that I have here before me. It's V-Mail, 1,017 Days of V-Mail.
And it's a thick book, a little more than 2 inches, and a 7 by 10.
Yeah.
Size, but so it's substantial. It's also a way for anyone who wants to learn about World War II to really get into the mind and heart of somebody who was at the heart of the war effort.
I was interested in how he kept his mind on the farm all the time, and he had this in his newly, he was going to farm when he got out.
You know, he grew up.
I've got a call here. Let me take that call. Good morning, online with our guest.
Yes, your email. My brother was stationed in England during the war and flew out in some bombers. I don't know exactly where he was stationed. But then we had some friends that were in the Pacific area, too, and we received email from both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I still have some, and it's interesting to look at them again.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. They make nice memories.
They do, yes.
Well, they do. They put you in touch with history. And for me, that's what this book did. You know, we all know something about World War II. But to go through 3 years, well, actually it's 1942 through 1945, but concentration of letters in 43, 44. Right. And it just brings you into the feeling of what it was like to be there.
It interests me how he got your mother to move up north to a farm.
Well, that was always somewhat contentious, yes. Growing up, she always said she hated the cold weather and snow, but she endured, she loved it. And you know, as I reflect on that, I think she talked many times after his death about maybe selling the farm and moving somewhere, et cetera. But I think now that I've read through all these letters and gone through it so many times, that's part of the dream, part of the passion she couldn't let go of either.
Right.
Because, as I started to say, my dad grew up in Cooperstown, New York, right downtown, right across from the Baseball Hall of Fame field.
And so his father had a drugstore?
He had a hardware store.
Hardware store.
But back then, when he grew up in the 20s, he was a big hunter. He the man across the street always took him out hunting up in the woods. And so my dad loved the outdoors. He was a Boy Scout. He was one of the first Eagle Scouts in Cooperstown back then. So he was an outdoorsman. And it doesn't surprise me, based on how he grew up, that he always wanted his own farm and wanted his own land and property.
He was farming along with being an engineer.
Correct, yes. The farm really was almost more of a hobby farm. We had a small dairy farm, 265 acres, which we still have. It's not operating, but we had about 40 cows that we'd milk. And then, of course, all the haying and all the, I grew up on a farm. So
Really, you grew up milking the cows?
Oh, yes, of course.
Well, Juke, you had a little of that, too, didn't you?
Oh, yes, indeed.
You had a grandfather or uncle?
Well, for a while we were on the farm, and I milked 3 cows every morning and every night. And milk before I went to school.
Yep.
Hey.
It's hard work, but very rewarding. And I think, again, some of the letters that Dad talks about in here, his dreams that once he gets out of this mess, he'd talk about or get out of the war, he wants to, have his own own farm and raise a large
family.
Took
him a little time, didn't it?
It did.
On the farm.
He actually bought the farm in 1955, so 10 years after he got out of the war, finally his dream came true to be able get the farm. And again, we still have it today. So
now, as an officer, he probably had a chance to save up some of the money for the farm.
I'm sure. Yeah, I think he did. I'm sure he did. You know, he worked different jobs after the war, coming home. But as an engineer, yeah, he was able to make it work. So, but it was somewhat of a hobby farm. He still worked as an engineer in a local city in New York State. Or really, it was, like I said, more of a hobby type farm, I mm-hmm. guess. But
and all your kids were born on the farm?
Born there. Yeah, we worked the farm with, you know, all six of us growing up. We had to work on the farm out as well. So
that's a good experience.
It is
too.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
Had you ever seen these letters before your mother passed them over to you?
Through the years, earlier, yes, mm-hmm. you know, I knew of them. We read some of them, but really, it's been the past 10 years or so. Really became more interested, more active with the Bomb Group Association. Wanted to learn more about the history of my dad and so on. I guess as you get a little bit older, you get more nostalgic and wanting to you know, learn more about your history and get it again. My intent was to really document it for our family and say, here it is. Here's what happened those 3 years. Here's our history of how our family got started, if you will. So.
And your mother has passed away, too.
She did, at age 87 in 2008. But a lot of stories. I've got a lot of video of her retelling some of the stories, which I put in the book as well. So there are quite a few family stories. But
a lot of adventure in this book, really, for anyone who wants to.
Exactly.
Some of it may seem day-to-day, and actually it is, the day-to-day activities which he went through and the keeping the planes in shape.
Right, yeah. Right. And yet, the whole experience of having World War II, not just being a list of dates and what big events happened where and who the big men were, you know, that were commanding the operations, but to get into this day-by-day sense of this is the life of somebody from 1942 through the victory in Europe, 1945.
Yeah.
And here's how it went, because he wrote to her almost every
all the
day.
Time. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
One of his letters, he refers to General Frank Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually was killed in Iceland on a B-24 coming back to the States, Arnold Air Force Base. And many people think of the Memphis Belle as the one that did the first 25 missions and that was sent over here for the barnstorming tour, but actually the Hot Stuff is the name of the plane that actually 3 months prior completed the first 25 missions. So we're working as a group to try and get an effort going to really rewrite the history books, if you will, on Hot Stuff as being the first official.
And we have to get out of here.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jim.
You bet, Duke. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And I'll be back after news and weather with more talk and sound for you here on WHTC in Holland. Stay tuned.